that we are meant to have consciousness of. Please.
Start again.
Yes.
Sorry.
Absolutely. There's a number of things that we're meant to have consciousness of. Even when we're not thinking about them. Just to give you an illustration of what I mean. If somebody walks through the door, somebody walks in the door, but does not allow room for their right arm, smashes the right arm into the door frame. So what would you assume is happening? What would you simply assume is happening to the person? No, I'm fine. Thanks, Fred. What would you assume? So you would either say intoxicated or a neurological disorder, tracking disorder, that he's not able to track himself properly through the door. You might assume that he tripped. You would come up with some explanation for why it is that he hadn't accommodated his arm when he was tracking it through the door. If you approached him about it and said, "Are you all right?" and he were to say, "Yeah, what's the problem with my arm? It wasn't me." So then you would say, "Okay, it's not neurological, it's psychological. Maybe psychiatric. That's psychotic. Everybody makes room for their right arm." There's no such thing as somebody who's not making room for their right arm. It's just part of what we do naturally, is we track room for our right arm. So David HaMelech uses that muscle for his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shiviti Hashem l'negdi samid ki mimini bal emot. That I don't trip over my right. So, what does that mean? That means that I have a consciousness of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that is ongoing. That doesn't mean that I'm sitting there saying or writing Tehillim all day. I'm learning. I'm carrying on with other activities. You say, "Oh, so you were carrying on with other activities, so that's why you forgot about your right arm." No. I don't forget about my right arm, because my right arm is loaded into RAM. Yeah? Got it? Now, my right arm is active in the background programs even when I'm doing something else in the foreground. It's not like I have to go back to the hard drive and pull up the program called right arm. And of course, when I close the program, so I can smash my right arm. It's always loaded. There are certain programs that are always running in RAM in the background. And so we never contradict those programs because they're always running. And so David HaMelech is able to say about himself, Shiviti Hashem l'negdi samid, I have a consciousness of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in front of me all the time. Ki mimini bal emot. It's just like I don't trip over my right arm. Don't trip over my right foot. That does not mean that he's sitting there focusing on it all the time. He doesn't have to. Now, in order to get to that level, you need to have some fairly serious time where you do focus on it exclusively, where you do give it very serious focus, with an eye towards getting it into RAM, where I don't have to give it constant focus because it is part of my consciousness. I remember the first time in my practice that I met somebody who I could not tell that he was married. It's a shocking moment. It had never happened to me before. I was talking to him as though he was a bachur. And at one point, something came up about his child or about his wife. I don't remember exactly. Wow, that's incredible. How'd that happen? What was I surprised about? I was surprised because for every person, every other person that I had met, being married is loaded into RAM. It's not something that needs to be, okay, the program gets closed down, now I'm, in yeshiva, or now I'm, no, it's part of what's running in the background. It's a background program that is running for the person, and others can pick up the fact that the person's married. But couldn't pick it up. That means that somehow it hadn't gotten into RAM. And I knew that they were in serious trouble right from that moment. Well, I didn't know that they were in serious trouble before because I didn't assume that he was married. So there are these things that we don't often talk about, the things that we're not supposed to be talking about. We're not supposed to be actively thinking about it. I don't have to sit there and say, Hanani Muchan Mazuman, to have my wife as a consciousness of my wife. Or Hinani Muchan Mazuman necessarily to have a consciousness of the Rabban Shalom. But it's supposed to be a constant consciousness. It's a mitzvah tamidi. I don't want to compare wife to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but the Kadosh Baruch Hu is one of the mitzvahs tamidi of. So we have all these things that we're supposed to sort of have in RAM. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the maning of the Olam, the fact that he was Motziyah from Mitzrayim. I want to talk about another thing that is supposed to be an ongoing consciousness. It's supposed to be an ongoing consciousness of other human beings. That means that we have an Olam Chesed. It's a world that is made up of chesed. It's a world that was created from chesed. The only reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world was to do chesed. And that's the only agenda, is that we should be able to be close to him. And that is the ultimate chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can offer us. And therefore he has to create us as others, because closeness to a self is not a meaningful closeness. Closeness to others is a meaningful closeness. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu creates us as other, a complex system for how it is that in his Bria there can be that which feels itself to be other than him, and that is where we are. We are able to be other than him, which is, affords us the opportunity to have Bechira. We can even choose to do wrong in order to be other than a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so that we can feel the closeness to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that is an Olam Chesed Yibane, and we are supposed to have Chesed as part of Ram, as part of our consciousness. Chazal, for example, the Gemara in Sukkah, in Memtes, I believe Amud Beis in Sukkah, bottom, says, what's the difference between Pia Pascha B'Chachma B'Soras Chesed Al Lashona? Her mouth speaks wisdom, and the Torah of Chesed is on her tongue. It's referring to Klal Yisrael. The her in that, Eishes Chayil is Klal Yisrael, you're welcome to sing it to your wife, but the her in that story is Klal Yisrael. And so the Gemara says, is there a Torah that is chesed and a Torah that's not chesed? The Gemara says, yes. There's a Torah that's chesed, that's just learning for yourself. Just learning for yourself, improve your brain power, improve your knowledge of Torah. So that's Torah She'ena Shel Chesed. A Torah that has a consciousness of other, whether it's presently or in the future, to be able to teach, to be able to share, to be aware of other. So that's Torah Chesed. That's what the Pasuk is referring to. Because Gemara says, how could it be Torah? Torah is Torah. Kulo Chesed. Kulo Chesed. Chein v'chesed. Everything about the Torah is Chesed. How could it be that there's a Torah She'ena Shel Chesed? The answer is that has to do with the person who's learning it. That's why it's Pia Pascha B'Chachma the Aruch Liner said, because in order to speak to somebody else, you need to use your mouth. You need to speak Pia Pascha B'Chachma. When she is speaking the Torah to somebody else, that's when it's Torah Chesed Alashana. A person just learning for themselves, they can do it silently. But hear her Bilvan, just do it silently. So this idea that somehow a consciousness of other is built into fiber, that we're somehow supposed to figure out how to get that into RAM. That consciousness of other is not supposed to be a closed program, open program thing. Like, okay, I have on my list of to-dos to be aware of four human beings at least once a day. Kind of like Purim. You know, I have to give one gift to two people, two gifts to one. So that would result in somebody going across the street and somebody said they once grabbed the midget, picked him up, and made a bracha, Mishan Habriya. The person, the midget is a chesed shel mitzvah. So there's a lulu, and there's an etrog, and there's a midget. Grabbed the midget, made a bracha over him. So, sure, Chazal said, when you see a midget, you make a bracha, Mishan Habriya. So, I'm not going to let mitzvah like that pass by. You have to do it with any mukhna mazalah. No. So, chesed shel mitzvah. So, we're supposed to get to a point where another human being is not viewed as a chesed shel mitzvah. We're supposed to get to the point where the other human being is pulsing through our bloodstream in a way that feels quite natural. Quite natural. In the same way that we would have a consciousness of our right arm, a consciousness of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the consciousness of another human being is supposed to be quite natural. What's the problem? Seemed like very obvious. We are a social being. Human beings are social beings. We exist in society. Nobody can possibly exist alone. So why should this even be a challenge? The problem, unfortunately, is school. That's unfortunately the problem. Believe it or not, not in your schools that you ever went to, but I've visited in schools where I've observed teachers saying things like, don't you worry about him, you do your own work. Jewish school? Are you kidding? Don't worry about him? Perhaps what you really meant was, you should definitely worry about him, and ongoing basis worry about him. However, right now, I need to know how to help you and how to help him. So please don't help him now. Help him during the time that I give you to review together, and not now, because now I need to know what he knows and what you know so that I can know how to help each of you. I'm sure that's what you meant, right? You didn't actually mean, don't worry about him. Right? You didn't really mean that. And the teacher looks at me like, oh, yeah, right. That's just what I meant. Right, how'd you know? It never happened to your schools, but I will tell you what I've observed in other schools. Watch what happens. These are Jewish schools we're talking about. Jewish schools. They take the two or three most successful children in the class, most successful youngsters in the class. That means the most talented, bright, outgoing, the best and strongest two or three students in the class. And they pit them against each other so that on the night before the test, each one is wishing the other a flu. You ever heard of such thing? Insanity, right? They call it a valedictorian. How many kids in the class are likely, are even in the running to be valedictorian in a given class? Class boy, I think, in some other world thing. Right? No? What do they call it there? The class representative, the one who speaks at the graduation, at the commencement. They have a word like
kicked out of school before.
I'm sure in South Africa they've got a word for it also. The class boy, or somehow the miyaseg hakita. They take, how many are likely in the running for that? Two? Some classes three? Those are kids who can get tens or 100 or whatever however grading pretty much on every test. So what's the only way that they're going to stand out? Since there's a ceiling effect to school. In other words, school does not stretch young people to their maximum. There's a ceiling effect. You hit that ceiling and everybody's getting 100. So what's the only way that they're going to stand out is that the other one has a flu. So you take the most promising future generation. You take the ones who are the examples for the rest of the class and are likely to be the examples for the rest of the school. You take them and you get them to wish somebody else failure. And you expect to have a Jewish school. And you wonder, like, huh, where does chesed go? Just can't figure it out. We better make a chesed project and we'll give a prize for the chesed project. That's the right? When you give a very, very tough medication, you also have to give the medication that will handle the side effects of that terrible medication, because these medications are terrible. So they messed up the entire school in terms of chesed, and then, oh, wait a second, we do a chesed project, and we'll have all the classes compete for who can do the best chesed project. Ah, the solution, like Alka-Seltzer. You have a problem, and here's the solution. Instead of taking a step back and saying, huh, you know, it might actually make a difference if the star students in the class had a natural shalom lishma, had a natural incentive to wish each other well. I've seen fourth grade Rebbe walking down the hall, holding his notes in his jacket. What's doing? Well, they have an incentive program. The principal gives them rewards and bonuses for the star teacher. He doesn't want the other fourth grade Rebbe to get his hands on. He found a new way to teach the Parsha. How to teach the Parsha. I don't want the other fourth grade Rebbe to have that. Yeah. That's going to produce Torah's Chesed. Why, that's really cool. Right. And then you have teachers' rooms where nobody wants to be the last one to leave. Imagine why nobody would want to be the last one to leave the teacher's room. Because what?
To clean up after everybody else.
That would be very cute. Because I need to clean up after everybody else. That would be very cute. It's unfortunately much more banal than that. They don't want to be the last one to leave the teacher's room because they only want to be the last one, rather, to leave the teacher's room. I'm sorry, I misspoke. They only want to be the last one to leave. They will not leave if they're not the last one to leave. And they all have to leave together because they're all afraid of what's going to be said about them after they walk out. So there's no way for any learning to go on in that building. Anything that's going on is completely artificial, just being force-fed into the students because the building is not suffused with Torah's chesed. The person who walks out of the teacher's room should walk out with a sense of wind in their sails, with other teachers wishing them well, looking forward to hearing of their success, sharing their ideas, sharing what might help, talking about what could be supportive. So then you walk out of the teacher's room and back into the classroom with wind in your sails, and then you help the students get wind in their sails by wishing each other well. Have the students check in with each other. I once was called to a school in Chicago. Anybody here from Chicago? Huh. Wonderful school. Wonderful school. This was a particularly, they called it a very tough 8th grade. Help with this 8th grade. We need help with this 8th grade. So I asked the Rebbe to please prepare 10 questions that would really, if they answered these 10 questions, they got the sugya. Don't do one of those, you know, Mivchan Amerikai, you know what that is? You know what a Mivchan Amerikai is? Multiple choice test, where three of the answers are ridiculous. And so he prepared it, he sent it, faxed it over to me, and we were living in Milwaukee at the time. So I'm coming down tomorrow, we're going to do a Chazara and take this test. You don't mind, we're going to take the same test. He said, if they could answer the questions in this test. I said, well, what do you expect to be the average? He said, well, we've got some guys in the class who are very, very bright. We have some guys in the class who are just not going to, this is too hard for them. They're not going to get this. Fine, so what's the average going to be? So I say, well, he figures out the average is going to be between 60 and 65. He's got some guys who are superstars. He's got some guys who are going to get a 2 on this test if you count their names. You know? So fine. So I pair them up, and I said, guys, I'm giving you these 10 questions. I want you to review the 10 questions. What typically happens when you put students into pairs? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. One person does the work, the other person takes the tramp. Absolutely nothing. Right? Small groups do not work. Okay. So I said, well, here's what I'm going to do. Put you guys in pairs. I want you to review the material. 10 questions. You're going to have the same 10 questions again for the test. I put a little line in front of every number. I put a little line. And on that number, on that little line, you're going to write a prediction as to whether or not your chavrusa is going to get the answer right or wrong. Every correct prediction gives you a bonus point. That's up to 10 extra bonus points that you can get for correctly predicting whether your chavrusa is going to get the answer right or wrong. Who works hardest for bonus points, by the way, in a class? kids will need the least, right? All kids who need it the least are the ones who work the hardest for the bonus points. Kids who don't need, who really could use the bonus points because they're going to get a 40 couldn't care less. They're not going to work for 10 more points. Doesn't matter. 40, 50, kind of the same deal. Okay? So the ones who are working the hardest are the brightest and strongest students in the class. They want the extra 10 points. They cannot go home with less than 110. Fine. So, and I tell them, you know, you're welcome to decide in the course of the Chazara that your Chavrusa is going to get it wrong. As if you guys disagree, you can decide. I would encourage you, however, to come to consensus. Why do I encourage you? It has to be a Shalom Lishma. Well, I encourage you to come to consensus because there's a lot of other people around in the room. And especially when we end the Chazara, everybody can go on their way back to their chairs and go talk to anybody. So it could be that he'll find out the right answer on the way back to his chair. And then you're in trouble because you predicted that he was going to get the answer wrong. So I encourage you to try to come to consensus so that you can predict that his answer is going to be right. But I will not insist on that, because if you really do fundamentally disagree, that's what Torah is about. Sometimes there's a machlokas, and he'll write what he's going to write, and you write what he's going to write. But you have to know what he's going to write. You've got to really know what he's going to write, so you have to talk it out. So you know exactly what it is that he's going to write, and you're quite certain that answer is wrong, predict that the answer is wrong. You're cool. And if he's really firm on that, then you're both okay. I gave them time for Chazara. It was amazing. It was amazing. You needed earplugs in the hall. It was amazing. It was screaming about. They were looking at the Mari Makomos, and they were looking at the Gemara, and they were looking at what the Rebbe had said, and they were talking it out, and they were saying, but he said, but it can't be, but it is, and they're checking with others, and they're yelling and screaming, and it's fantastic. They're on the desktops. It was absolutely amazing. The Kol Torah in that room, it was just second to none. It was absolutely amazing. Fantastic. Baruch Hashem. Finally had a taste of what it really meant to just be totally and absolutely immersed in Torah's Chesed, because they're looking at two things. One is, did I understand? And the other is, did you understand? Because it's not enough for me to just say that I understood Shalom Aleich Nafshi. I have to check to see if the other one understood. So, after the Chazara was over, I gave them about 20 minutes or so. I couldn't at heart stop it. It was beautiful. Absolutely. Just what we have. That's what we have schools for. That was beautiful. Put them back in their chairs. Had them take the test with clean desks, clean chairs. They're now sitting separate from where their chavrusas are, because my favorite activity, which is helping other people during the test, which I happen to think is one of the only creative things that students do in school, is to figure out how to help each other during tests. It's one of the only creative things that goes on. But in this particular case, I did want to know what each of them knew and how they each did. So they just wrote their name and the name of their chavrusa on the paper, and they answered the questions. It was not multiple choice. They actually had to write out the answers. And when they were done, I asked the Rebbe if he would please mark the tests, because I wanted to know the average. And I also wanted to talk to the guys. So I turned on a video camera, and I went to each guy. Just let the video camera, and the guys had to make some funny faces first, you know, things that eighth graders need to do to clear their heads, you know. So they, after they were done making the funny faces into the video camera, I then turned to each one and I said, what were you thinking while you're taking the test? So the first one said, I was sending him the answer by telepathy across the room. I said, that's good. We have to find out, you know, how that works, because that's powerful, you know. That's a great way to cheat, you know. Woody Allen line, right? You know Woody Allen's famous line about that? I cheated on my metaphysics exam. I read the soul of the guy next to me. Right? So you're saying, okay, what were you thinking during the test? Well, we changed our answer to number 4 right at the end. We realized that we didn't have the right answer, and we changed it. And I was like sitting there hoping that he remembered what it was that we changed it to and not the old answer, because I was writing down that he was going to get it right. So I was hoping that he remembered what we switched to. That I think about that a lot during the test. What were you thinking? Well, I'm really not good at this Gemara thing. I'm really not good at it. But he said that he was going to write down that I was going to get them right. So I was sitting there just being super careful to write down every word exactly the way we had understood it. We agreed to write it down. And I was just like really, really careful, because he was counting on me. So on with every single boy in the class. Torah Chesed. That means that there is no activity in this world, none, that is in any way have any value at all, where there isn't room to wish somebody else well at the same time. Individualistic type of activities like using the bathroom, there is still room to wish somebody else well, to think that they're leaving the place neat, clean for somebody else to be able to use, thinking about the fact that somebody else might be needing it. There's a consciousness when we eat food, which is a rather individualistic activity, but there's a consciousness of who made the food and who that it should be pleasant, with pleasant conversation, pleasant table manners, in order for it to be pleasant for other people to eat as well, to make sure that there's enough for everybody, etc. There is no activity that is so individualistic where there is not room to wish somebody else well. And if you think that you found such an activity, you can be 100% certain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no interest in that activity. That's what the internet is. You can be 100% certain. If somebody were to say, what makes you so sure that this activity is bad? And the answer is, because you're not thinking about anybody else in the world. The only person you're thinking about is yourself. And that's so it cannot possibly be good, because it has no consciousness of other whatsoever. And consciousness of other is something that runs in RAM. It's meant to be running continuously in RAM in the background. It's not a program that we shut down and reopen. It's not a program that is somehow, oh, I have to remember four times a day to say a nice word to somebody. That might be a good training exercise to be able to get to the point, just as we have to do that with regards to Shivisi Hashem. We have to do that in order to increase that consciousness. If we don't have it naturally, we have to increase the consciousness, which means that if we were a little bit too good in school, for better or for worse, if we got the message from school a little bit too well, then we may need to do some very conscious work to be able to undo that message and go back to being social human beings. But in the end of the day, it's meant to be consciousness in RAM. It's meant to be a consciousness that is just running through the background all the time. It then will bubble forward when there's opportunities to help somebody and opportunities to greet somebody, opportunities to do chesed. When those opportunities arise, it will not turn the other person into a chesed shel mitzvah. It'll simply be the pouring forth of a consciousness that exists beforehand. And that's why davening is not meant to be a total change of gear. That I'm a kofer all day long, and then I am doing things actively. I'm doing things in davening. I'm turning it all over to the Ribbono Shel Olam in davening. So how can I do davening and also do learning? How can it be that I'm learning, or that I'm working, that I'm doing things? It's all Ribbono Shel Olam. And the answer is, it's part of the consciousness that goes back into RAM. It's true. It's not in the foreground. In the foreground, I'm trying to learn. In the foreground, I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bring about outcomes in my world. But coming back to davening is not such a jarring experience. Coming back to davening, although Chazal say that you do need a little bit of a transition. It is quite a dramatic transition. Chassidim Rishonim are Yeshoim HaShoah. The decompression chamber took them an hour. And Chazal seemed to imply that it meant an hour literally. They asked the question, if you spent 9 hours a day davening, when did you learn? If they asked that question, it must be that they understood that the hour was literal. So there is a sense of transition that happened. It's a transition. It's not a simple matter. So I believe that where we sort of got off the trail, where most of us have any difficulty with this, is because we are hearing a certain message echoed in our ears. The message says, you do your own work. Don't worry about anyone else. That message has a pervasive effect, because it plays right into the world of Esav. The world of Esav, where I can abuse people. People are just objects. People are just there for my... If I want them or need them or want to use them, then they're there. And if not, they're not there. They just drop out of consciousness. That's Esav's world. And so it fits. It fits to get that message. And that message, in fact, was initiated in the world of Esav. Jewish schools were never like that. The most stark example of that were the Oriental schools, the Yemen, etc. The idea of everybody having their own book. You figure out how to position the book so that you can both look at it. It wasn't even, it was just natural. You position the book so that somebody else can see it. Why? Because Torah's chesed. Because of the consciousness of other, it doesn't have to be hinani muchan mezuman. It's just naturally, there were never enough resources. The thought of everybody, this is a modern thing, this is basically an American thing. Everybody's got to have their own book. Who said it? Who was koveya that chok? Oh, because it's hard for him. Fine. So then position it so that he can see it, or you can see it. Position the book and use the book together. I remember the first time that my son, one of my sons who was learning with me, I remember the first time that I pulled out two copies of the Sefer from the shelf. 23 years old, entitled to his own Sefer. He said, "Abba, why do we need two? Just naturally, why did we need two? This is nice. We cuddle up and we look at the Sefer together." It happens to be because he has an eye focusing issue, and I needed him to have a larger Gemara. And as it stands, I don't need that. And I wanted him to have it close to him, so there was an answer to the question, but it was great. What do we need for? Since when do we need two Sfarim? So we're meant to get this orientation kind of back. I don't think that it's something that needs to be invented yesh me'ayin. We don't have to sort of create it ex nihilo. What we do is have to rediscover that we are fundamentally anshei chesed. We know that we are created out of chesed. The way that a human being comes into the world is only through chesed. That is, through love and a caring and a sharing, a human being comes to the world. Again, unfortunately, there are some human beings that come into the world straight out of the world of Esav, where this person came into the world only because somebody was abusing somebody else, and not because there was chesed. The child wasn't necessarily conceived in chesed. Big problem. It's a big problem. So you have schools that are sending the message. You have homes where the child is not necessarily conceived in chesed, and you have a challenge. No chance. But that does not let us off the hook. And I just want to give you some of these tools of awareness, because everybody needs upgrade in this area. There's no such thing. None of us can say, "I have enough." Fascinating thing about the world of enough. The world of sufficiency is such a fascinating study. When you speak to people about their Gashmias. Did you ever hear anybody just simply say what Yaakov Avinu said after he gave away a $30 million gift to Esau? You know what he said? He actually called. Total sufficiency. I don't need anything. I'm fine. What does Esau say? Yeshli Rav. I have a great deal. You know what Yeshli Rav means? I want more. That's what "I have a great deal" means. Yesh lamana rotzim masayim. Yaakov said, "I have everything." Did you ever hear anybody say, when it comes to Gashmias, "I don't need more. Sufficient, it's fine. I don't need more, I have everything." Totally fine. But ask people about their spiritual lives. "Come on, dude, don't be extreme, you know, I have enough. I put on tefillin, and I go to shul, and I, you know, kudzel with the rabbi, go bowling with him on Wednesday nights. You know, I'm fine. But interesting, sufficiency in the realm of our spiritual lives is not at all uncommon. To have people say, "I'm fine, I'm fine. Who needs more? Who needs more? Is it greedy? You know, you know, the greedy, I know, the haredim, you know, they're greedy about this spiritual stuff. It's not tough to be greedy. I have enough. It's good. It's nice. It's fine." Ask them if they would say the same thing about their bank account or about their stock portfolio. "I don't have to check what the listings are. Whatever it is, I have enough. I'm fine. Don't have to check the listings to find out what my stocks are doing. It's fine. Enough." That sufficiency unfortunately, even for both groups, both the groups that do it for their gashmias and the groups that do it for their ruchnias, unfortunately you'll find in many areas that they'll both do it with regard to their social interactions. I'm as good as I need to be. I'm as good and as open and as caring as I need to be. Who needs more? We don't have to be greedy in the area of chesed. You don't have to be greedy about it. So for that, the computer world has given us the concept of a version upgrade. So today, the person is in version 34.1.25. 34 years old, first month, 25th day. Tomorrow, however, there's a version upgrade. 34.1.26. Tomorrow's a different day. So, well, I upgraded yesterday, but this is a major upgrade. I'm going to just forget about it? This is a major upgrade. This is a significant major upgrade that was just introduced. And in fact, that can be going on an ongoing basis. The question is, do I have a consciousness that today is an upgrade in the areas that are meant to be in my RAM? And that comes straight out of the computer muscle. Yeah, today's an upgrade. What is the upgrade about? The upgrade is about a little bit of an enhanced consciousness, a little bit of an enhanced focus. I chose somebody and I'm wishing them well. I don't necessarily have to identify myself to that person, but I'm wishing them well. And I will tell you a secret. I'll tell you a secret. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter seems to have revealed the secret. So I will share with you the secret. It's not my secret. There is a stress support achievement ratio. Stress and achievement always got the graph. That means as stress goes up, achievement goes up. It's zero stress to zero achievement. Everybody can feel that? If everything's manana, if you don't have to do anything. So at zero stress, there's zero achievement. Okay? As stress goes up, achievement goes up until some point called point X, which seems to be different for every human being, where if stress continues to go up beyond point X, achievement starts going down, approaching zero. So again, let's just go over the graph. At zero stress, there's zero achievement. As stress goes up, achievement goes up until level X. Then after level X, achievement starts to drift off and goes down eventually close to zero, if not fully zero. Okay? Why do some people have a level X here and some people have a level X there? Why is it that no two people seem to have the same level X? Famous story about the Rebbe of Zusha being approached about how you can serve Hashem with love and joy amid suffering. His response is, what suffering? Wrong address. And he goes on to share the stress and to be empathetic and to share the stress and provide support for hundreds, if not thousands of people in the course of his lifetime, never crossing. I mean, the man is racked with poverty. He's not well. And he's, what stress? What are you talking about? Wrong address. And other people, if you just look at them the wrong way, you don't quite look at them, you know, and they're off to Nana Land, running to the internet cafe, you know, just like can't deal with it. Life has to be escaped. It's too much. So why is it that some people can handle the level X is way out there, and some people, the level X is some tiny fraction of a millimeter from zero? But it's just, that's too much stress. And the answer is a subjective experience of support and nurturance. Subjective meaning it's not objective, it's not actual. It's a subjective feeling. The person feels support and nurturance, then their level X goes further out along the stress graph. So, if you have person like the Rebbe of Zusha, where is he feeling support from? Anybody can venture a guess? Right. So he's feeling support from the Ribbono Shel Olam to the extent that he's feeling completely fine, taken care of. And so he is free to care about others. because he's fine, he's completely taken care of. And so the subjective experience of support is so high that he can absorb more stress without a drop in achievement. So we're supposed to work on, for ourselves, we're supposed to work on increasing our subjective experience of support. That's called bitachon. However, we're not supposed to do that to the next guy. The next guy, we're supposed to assume that if he had a drop more support, if he experienced a drop more support, he would be able to achieve that much more without a drop in achievement. In other words, for myself, I'm supposed to assume that I have the support. I'm supposed to work on building my sense, my internal sense that I have support, so that I can absorb more and more stress and in fact be able to be empathetic to the stress of others. With regard to others, however, the assumption is that if they just had a little bit more support, one more smile, one nice word, one cup of water, one shalom aleichem, that little bit might actually tilt the scales for them to have the subjective experience of support such that they would be able to absorb much more of the stress of their life and achieve. By the way, you'll be credited after 120. That's why it's going to be such a confusing moment. Because here you smiled at somebody, and because of that smile, the person was able to learn a little bit better because it was a difficult sugya that he was in, and because of that he learned a little bit better, and as a result he went home in a better mood, and that provided more support to his wife, because when he walked in the house it was a little bit more radiant, and she was in a tough place, but she was able to latch on to the fact that he came into the house in a little bit more strength and a little bit more of a pleasant moment. And so they interacted differently with the kids that evening when they were putting the kids to bed. And so the kid went to sleep with a little bit of a better feeling. He woke up the next morning feeling a little bit better about himself and about life. And as a result, he went to school and he was able to learn a little bit more. He became a great Talmid Chacham, a Gaon, because it clicked that day with his Rebbe. And he just, when it clicked that day, that he was able to, the Rebbe felt that he was there, and somehow there was that communion that happens between a Rebbe and a Talmud, and it happened that day because he walked into class in a good shape. And he went on to become a Gadol because this Rebbe took a special interest in him, and he flowered. And you're going to come after 120 and they're going to start giving you credit for this Gadol and everything that he does, because he was cruising to be an auto mechanic. And he's this Gadol, and you're getting credit for everything that he does. And you say, I think you guys, it's really nice, but I think you guys got the wrong party. And we don't get the wrong party. We get it all right. Well, how could I possibly have anything to do with that Gadol? I don't even know his name. I don't know who you're talking about. I have absolutely no clue as to what this is about. And the answer is, oh, yeah. That was the day that you smiled at this guy. Do you remember? Do you remember? You gave him a smile when he walked into the room. Do you remember? It's obvious, right? So now you get all the credit for this Gadol. Huh. Confusing system, huh? Some people even say that you're supposed to put some allusion to your name at the end of Shemoneh Esrei. Some reference to your name, a pasuk, something that somehow alludes to or refers to your name, because on that day you're just absolutely going to forget who you are. I cannot believe. Because as it happens, the other reverse is also true. We don't want to even describe that. We don't go there. That's not nice. Right? But the reverse is also true. And so I could be hit with some story about some kid who's off the tracks. I said, what do I have to do with that kid? I don't even know who he is. So don't you remember that day that you were kind of feeling a little bit down, so you let everybody know about it? And this guy took the wind out of his sails and he went home, and the story kind of unfolded a little differently. Me? I've got to do with that? Simple. Oh, not a big deal. Just here, sure. Cause and effect. Everything just flows. So there's an upgrade. It can come from consciousness. It can come, maybe sometimes we have to do it actively, but we should know that what we're really doing is reconnecting with that which is fundamentally ours. This is not trying to invent something that is not there. Everybody who listens to this, everybody here in the room, is saying to himself, I know what that's about. This is not news. You're not telling us any news. The only thing that we're doing is having a reminder session to remind ourselves of who it is that authentically who we are, so that we can reconnect with that, so that we have the opportunity to have Torah's Chesed al-Lishonah. Hatzlacha Rabbah.